towards the pagans, who still think that there is another God with the Almighty Allah. Now, one of the things that the enemies do is to create doubts in ideological subjects. And if we do not accept a fact, it is not a reason that it will not occur, but or it does not exist. So this verse states the logic of rejectors of the resurrection in one sentence. It says, وَقَالَ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا, and those who disbelieve say, أَإِذَا كُنَّا تُرَابًا وَآبَاؤُنَا أَإِنَّا لَمُخْرَجُونَ, when we have become dust, and our fathers too, shall we certainly be brought forth again? So, they actually only suffice to this matter, that it is impossible that a man becomes dust and comes to life again, while they were dust at first and they came into being from dust. Is not it possible that they return to dust and then come forth for a new life? It is interesting that there are 8 instances in the Holy Quran with the same meaning, wherein, as soon as they come to imagination of impossibility of hereafter, they have paved the path of denial. Then they add, لَقَدْ وَعِدْنَا هَذَا نَحْنُ وَآبَاؤُنَا, indeed, we had been promised this, we and our fathers before too, وَآبَاؤُنَا مِنْ قَبْلِ. And the verse continues saying, إِنْ هَذَا إِلَّا أَسَاطِيرُ الْأَوَّلِينَ, so these things that you are saying, these are not but fables of the ancients. So they say that they were promised it before, but they found no sign of it. So these promises are not anything but imaginations and superstitions. So they begin from impossibility of the occurrence of hereafter, and after that, they take it as the foundation of an absolute denial. We'll discuss more after a short break. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. 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 So, dear listeners, these two verses actually discuss the main argument of the enemies of those ones who deny the existence of hereafter, and actually those pagans. They say in one sentence, أَإِذَا كُنَّا تُرَابًا وَآبَاؤُنَا أَيْنَا لَمُخْرَجُونَ, when we have become dust, and our fathers too, shall we certainly be brought forth again? So, in their minds, it is impossible to become dust and come to life again. Yet, they do not pay attention to their selves. They do not pay enough attention to their own beings. Because how did they come into this world in the very first place? They became existent from dust, from turab. But they do not know. They are not aware of it. لَقَدْ وَعِدْنَا هَذَا نَحْنُ وَآبَاؤُنَا مِنْ قَبْلِ إِنْ هَذَا إِلَّا سَاطِيرُ الْأَوَّلِينَ. So these things that we have been promised previously, and our fathers were promised too, these are nothing but fables of the ancients. So this is the argument of the pagans. But they begin from the impossibility of occurrence of hereafter, and they take it as the foundation of absolute denial. It seemed that they expected resurrection that happens very soon. So, since they did not see it in their own lifetime, they negated it. However, these statements are the sign of their pride and negligence. And let us remember the fact that through this wrong interpretation, they wanted to belittle the Prophet's words about hereafter. They wanted to say that this is one of the baseless old promises which others gave to their ancestors And they were misguided, some of their ancestors, as they claim, and it was not a new matter for them to be dealt with. So they actually say that we are quite accustomed to these old fables of ancient, and we know how to deal with it. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me, worry, and that's when faith begins.
Iranian Radio. Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program. And Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh, and welcome to the studio.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. We are near the end of the month of Ramadan, and we have decided to talk about some of the jurisprudential laws based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei, but in relation to fitr. In other words, or in more particular, Zakat al-Fitr, or the charity that Muslims and Shias, in fact, pay at the end of the month of Ramadan, well, as a kind of ritual tax to cleanse themselves, all right, and their soul, and finish off the month of Ramadan, actually, in one way or another. Well, so we have been discussing some of these jurisprudential laws, Sheikh Javid, and some of them remained. Let me start this episode by this question. You know, some women or wives of those men help them with the family expenses.
Right.
Right? And both of them, both of the parents are working.
Yes.
Right? So this wife actually helps her husband with the family expenditures. And, well, because her husband, for example, is incapable of meeting the family needs. Well, who pays the zakat of fitr for the family? Is it the wife who should pay, or no? Both of them should pay.
Well, as long as the woman is considered a dependent of her husband, it is her husband who is obliged to pay their zakat al-fitr, okay? Because he is the guardian of the family, and he is responsible for the zakat al-fitr of not only his wife, but also his children. And of course, it's not necessary for the wife, even if she has her own income and she has a job to do, she has her own assets and bank balance. But it's not her responsibility to pay her zakat al-fitr. So it is the duty of her husband. As long as I'm telling this, it's very much I need to be clear that as long as she is dependent, and she is considered to be dependent on her husband, it is her husband who should pay the zakat al-fitr.
If she's not dependent?
He's dependent, and nor that of anyone else, for example, she's not relying on her father as well, then she must pay her own zakat al-fitr in this case.
I see. Yeah. But if another question or another scenario just related to this previous question, if the husband could not make ends meet,
right,
and the wife is somehow considered or can be counted as a breadwinner,
right,
of the family, then is it the responsibility of the wife to pay the zakat al-fitr?
Well, for the whole family, of course it is, because when the man of the family does not have any money, he's not responsible to give any zakat al-fitr because he himself is poor. A poor person is not supposed to give any zakat al-fitr.
I see.
As long as he is considered by religious standard to be poor. And of course, if the wife can afford to pay, then it's necessary to pay the zakat al-fitr on behalf of the family and the family members.
And what about this question? Can this husband, the poor husband, receive the charity, the zakat al-fitr?
You know, the zakat al-fitr cannot be given to your dependent. For example, you cannot give your charity to your father, to your children, nor can they give their charity to you. Yes. But okay, if there are a few poor people,
right,
and they are so poor that none of them can afford, of course, it is recommended, not obligatory, that, for example, I have a few roommates. We live for example, there are a few. Imagine there are a few unmarried people, they live together in the same room or in the dormitory, and they are poor, they cannot afford their living expenses. So it is said that, okay, one of them can give their zakat al-fitr to the other person, and that person can give the same zakat al-fitr to another person, and then to another person, and then the last one can give it to someone other than the very group of people. Someone outside them.
I see.
That's the solution.
I have another relevant question, but I have to postpone it to the after break. Stay with us when we come back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio. Don't go away.
Ya Allah, thank you for another chance standing at my door. Ya Allah, you give me hope, deliver this gift right to my home. مرحب مرحب يا رمضان أحيي قلوبنا بالقرآن حل ليالينا بالقيام أهلا أهلا بالصيام.
Welcome back to the program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio, with me, Mohammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We're still talking about some of the jurisprudential laws related to Zakat al-Fitr, based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Well, Sheikh Javid, if a man fails to pay Zakat al-Fitr, this ritual charity at the end of the month of Ramadan, how does this affect his wife and children?
Well, his wife and children have no particular obligation in this regard.
Mm.
And therefore, they need not to pay Zakat al-Fitr, you know, because they are not responsible. They are relying on the husband who maybe willingly, intentionally, and willfully does not pay the Zakat al-Fitr because he's someone who is negligent, or because maybe because of an accident he fails to pay Zakat al-Fitr. So in either case, whatever the scenario, the children and the wife of the family are not under any obligation to pay the Zakat al-Fitr in the very example that you generated.
I see. When does Zakat al-Fitr become due, Sheikh?
Well, I would say that once the appearance of the moon, you know, here I should make a mention of the controversy, or there's a kind of actually a difference of opinion when it comes to when one can pay Zakat al-Fitr. Now, there are some scholars who are of the view that Zakat al-Fitr can be given any time during Ramadan, whether it is before the 15th of Ramadan, in the early days of Ramadan, or after the near the end of the Ramadan. So there are some scholars like His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Sistani who's of the view that it can be paid any time during Ramadan. But of course, His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khamenei is of the view that the Zakat al-Fitr cannot be paid any time during Ramadan. It must be set aside on the eve of Eid al-Fitr. So it can be given after it is set aside. So after, for example, he is of the view that once the appearance of the new moon of the month of Shawwal has been ascertained on the night preceding Eid al-Fitr, then one may set aside the amount of goods or money one must pay as Zakat al-Fitr. And of course, if one is planning to attend the Eid al-Fitr prayer, one must, as a measure of obligatory precaution, submit the amount due or at least set aside prior to the to performing the prayer. Okay, put it aside. Maybe you cannot find within those 2 hours any poor person, so you can set it aside and make sure that money that you set aside will not be used by you yourself. That same very money that you have put aside must be kept for the poor person. For example, if it's old or new, you cannot replace it with new ones or with new notes, with new bills.
I see.
And that same bill must be paid to the poor.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Javed. Let's take another break and then we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio. Stay tuned.
Followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, yeah, Allah. Guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah. Don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Welcome back to the program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Shaita with our guest speaker. We are still talking about some of the jurisprudential laws related to the Zakat al-Fitr, based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khomeini. Sheikh Javed, presuming there are people in another country who are more in need than those in our own country or the country of our residence, is it permissible to pay Zakat al-Fitr a few days early so that it may reach the recipients in the foreign country on time? Also, can we ask someone else or who lives in that particular country to pay Zakat al-Fitr to the qualified recipient on our behalf and then reimburse him later when we meet?
Right, that's a good question. Of course, as I said, that as a measure of obligatory precaution, you cannot pay the Zakat al-Fitr in advance. For example, if you just make a phone call to your friend and tell him to pay Zakat al-Fitr anytime during Ramadan, that's not valid as a measure of mandatory precaution, ihtiyat wajib. But of course, it is permissible to ask someone to function as your representative, wakil, okay,
yes,
in paying Zakat al-Fitr to the poor people on your behalf,
right,
on the same time day of Eid al-Fitr. For example, in the morning of Eid al-Fitr, someone who represents you, who represents you, will function as an agent, as a representative, and will give the money on behalf of you to the poor person in another city or another country. And that's a good mechanism. And so you will reimburse him later on after you meet him, or maybe somehow you will send him the money. But that person in another country or in another town will function as your agent or representative and will give the poor people the Zakat al-Fitr on your behalf and also on behalf of your kids or your wife, your children. And of course, as I said, it is permissible to grant the amount that one will have to pay as Zakat al-Fitr to a qualified recipient during the month of Ramadan as a loan. As a loan, that's another solution, okay? You give some money as a loan to someone, and then when the beginning of the month of Shawwal has been ascertained, one can forfeit the loan as payment for Zakat al-Fitr. Okay, you will consider that amount you lent to someone as Qarz al-Hasana, you will consider that as Zakat al-Fitr, and you will not demand it later on.
A very quick question, Sheikh. We don't have much time. What if we forgot Zakat al-Fitr or to pay it?
Well, if you have set aside the amount due, of course, prior to noontime or on Eid al-Fitr, but have forgotten to pay it due to some reasons, you need only to submit the amount you have set aside, okay? And of course, but if you have not even set aside the amount due on you, of course, you must, as a measure of obligatory precaution, pay your Zakat al-Fitr to the qualified recipient. Qualified recipient means a poor and eligible person. But your intention in doing so should simply be to seek proximity to God, qurbatan ilallah, without distinguishing it as a timely action, ada, or an overdue action whose time has passed.
Thank you very much, Sheikh. And thank you, my listeners, my audience, for joining your own program, Islamic Laws. We've been talking about some of the jurisprudential laws related to Zakat al-Fitr based on a fatwa issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Hi everyone, Judge Andrew Napolitano here for Judging Freedom. Scott Ritter will be with us in just a moment on just how foolish is it, how unwise is it for the Trump administration to be attacking Houthis and civilians in Yemen. Scott Ritter, welcome here, my dear friend. Before we talk about the attack on the Houthis and Yemen civilians over the weekend perpetrated by the Trump administration, I'd like your take on the back and forth and back and forth, Witkoff, Rubio, Trump, Putin, that's been going on. As I understand it from Alistair Crook, Secretary Rubio actually had Steve Witkoff deliver to President Putin a signed copy of the so-called ceasefire agreement signed by Marco Rubio and by Vladimir Zelensky. That does not strike me as appropriate or standard diplomacy, but this is something relatively new. What's your take on it?
Well, I, of course, can't confirm this reporting, so I don't know. You're right to point out that that would be a departure from diplomatic norms, because the implication is that they're trying to strong arm Russia into accepting something that would be unacceptable for Russia. And I don't believe if that tactic was used that it would work. President Trump's trying to play a very weak hand right now. And the Russians have been, I think, extraordinarily gracious in not holding the president to account for the failures of diplomatic norm, for the failures of common sense, for the failures of decency. You know, the president on the one hand will articulate repeatedly how he understands that, you know, Russia didn't start this conflict. He understands how this conflict came about. It's about, you know, the expansion of NATO, which Russia took umbrage to. And the president said that Russia had every right. Then Marco Rubio turns around and says, rightly so, that this is a proxy war between the United States and Russia. I'll say that one more time, a proxy war between the United States and Russia. Ukraine is simply the tool for this. If you have that kind of comprehension, then why are you playing the game as if Ukraine has a say in anything that's going on here? Why are you paying attention to, you know, the Ukrainian, you know, positions that, you know, they must return the borders to 2014, 2022, that Russia must pay reparations. I mean, there's just an absolute inconsistency in the president's approach here. And while I don't want to predict the future, I will say that it will fail, because this is an existential issue for Russia. And this is amateur hour in the extreme to think that presenting a document signed by Marco Rubio and Volodymyr Zelensky is going to somehow twist the arm of a Russian president who's been at war for 3 years, who has taken the personal responsibility of the deaths of tens of thousands of his soldiers, who is the leader of his nation, is somehow going to throw that all away because Marco Rubio signed a damn piece of paper along with Zelensky. This is insanity. I'm surprised Witkoff went along with it, because
how can the Russians, as astute as Foreign Minister Lavrov and as astute and patient as President Putin is, how can the Russians look upon Rubio, Waltz, and Witkoff as honest brokers? We're not honest brokers. We're co-belligerents. We're the principal belligerents by instigating and provoking the war and paying for it.
Well, I think the difference, again, this is me speaking. I can't speak on behalf of the Russians, no matter how much the FBI thinks I do. When you look at the words of the senior Russians, they acknowledge that the Trump administration is seeking to move the relationship in a direction that the relationship should be in. That is one where diplomacy is reestablished, where diplomatic norms are recognized. And therefore, the Russians are able and willing to differentiate between the sins of the past and the actions of the present. And I think this is an accurate point. And no matter what we think of the Trump administration, good, bad, ugly, pretty, whatever, we do need to acknowledge that this is a distinct departure from past practice, that this is a different administration, that this administration wasn't in power in February of 2022, that this administration did not create the proxy conflict that's ongoing since February 2022, that this administration is not responsible for arming, for targeting, for directing the assaults undertaken by Ukraine against Russian territory, that this administration seeks peace. So the Russians are willing to overlook a lot of hiccups, stumbles, foibles, mistakes, because they think that this is the better direction to be headed in. But okay, there's going to be only so much tolerance for incompetence. And at some point in time, if this incompetence seeks to strong-arm Russia into doing something that's against Russian national interests, the Russians are going to say, "Niet."
Very, very interesting and astute observation, Scott. Jumping to Israel, Netanyahu announced yesterday, Sunday, that on Wednesday he's going to fire the head of Shin Bet. Is there more here than meets the eye? Under Israeli law, according to the Israeli Attorney General, he can only be fired for cause, and Netanyahu has not articulated any cause. This is like firing the head of the FBI.
Yeah, the Shin Bet has several investigations underway against Netanyahu. There is, of course, the years-old corruption investigation that Netanyahu has been working very hard to shape the judicial system so that he would never stand trial. And then there are a series of ongoing investigations related to October 7th and Netanyahu's actions in the aftermath of the initiation of this conflict by Hamas, the failures of leadership that took place. But I think more critically is the one that hardly anybody's talking about. Seymour Hersh has written about it extensively, and that is the absolute violation of law and breach of national security used by Netanyahu in an effort to shape a very politicized argument about the hostages. It was causing him a tremendous amount of political harm. To shape that argument in a way that was favorable to him, but in absolute departure from the facts. He misrepresented a document whose secrecy was such that it was kept locked up in a room. Nobody was supposed to acknowledge its existence. He not only revealed its existence, but took the contents of this document and deliberately misrepresented it to spin it as if Hamas was the one responsible for sabotaging a hostage release deal, when in fact it was him all along. And he is now under investigation for lying to the Israeli people and for violating national security by leaking a document he had no authority to leak. And the Shin Bet's the one that's investigating this. So literally has, I believe he has brought in the Shin Bet guy and say, "Make this go away." And the Shin Bet guy saying, "No, I'm not doing that. I'm doing my job." And so Netanyahu's trying to fire him.
I guess there's no way to know what the political ramifications will be to this. According to Alistair Crook, the Israeli society is deeply divided between the Smotrich Ben-Gaviers, who believe that the Old Testament justifies their slaughter, and the more modern liberal Democrats, lowercase d, who believe in equal protection, equal rights, and a true democracy. I don't know how you bridge that gap. I really don't. I don't know how this is going to end.
Well, the Israeli president agrees with you, and Judge, this isn't a new problem. Prior to October 7th, 2023, there are hundreds of thousands of Israelis in the streets demanding the resignation of Netanyahu as he sought to change Israeli basic law so that he could take political control of the courts so that his corruption case would never go to trial. And, even reserve pilots said, "We will never fly again." And the Israeli president came out and said that Israel is on the cusp of a real civil war, not a civil conflict, not civil unrest, a shooting civil war between the opponents of Netanyahu and the supporters of Netanyahu. That was before. And a whole lot's happened since then that has only further torn Israeli society apart. So Israel is literally a nation that has unbridgeable gaps, and the consequences of this will more than likely be some sort of civil conflict involving armed parties on either side, Jews killing Jews in the Holy Land.
Before I ask you about the Houthis, I want to read a portion of the president's tweet. It's way too long to read the entire thing, but there you can see it's President Donald Trump's tweet about ordering the United States military. The more incendiary stuff is at the end. "To all Houthi terrorists," now this is in caps, "your time is up and your attacks must stop starting today. If they don't, hell will rain down upon you like nothing you have ever seen before, exclamation point. "To Iran, support for the Houthi terrorists must end immediately. Do not threaten the American people, their president, who has received one of the largest mandates in presidential history, or worldwide shipping lanes. If you do, beware, because America will hold you fully accountable, and we won't be nice about it. All right, that's very Trumpian language. Can't you argue that the United States engaged in terrorism, Donald Trump and Pete Hegseth, by killing Yemen civilians over the weekend?
Well, not only can you argue that, that's a cognizable action in any court that would claim jurisdiction.
Give us the background and your understanding here.
Well, I mean, first of all, the American people need to know that the Houthi of Yemen have been in war with the America via proxy since 2014. The Saudi Arabian Air Force, using aircraft provided by the United States of America, dropping bombs provided by the United States of America, bombs targeted by the intelligence provided by the United States of America, have been pummeling Yemen for a decade. And Yemen hasn't blinked. The United States got involved in, participating in these attacks last year, for over a year now. We've been in a quasi war with the Houthi, because the Houthi are very principled people, and they said, "We will not stand by idly while genocide is taking place. The Palestinian people of Gaza must be allowed access to humanitarian goods. The blockade must be lifted. And until which time those conditions are met, we will prevent Israeli shipping from transiting through the Red Sea into the port of Eilat." And they succeeded in shutting down the shipping. The port went bankrupt. The Israeli economy was devastated. Now, this is a Houthi action against the Israelis, and America stuck its nose in it. And then America said, "No, you can't do this. You have to cease your blockade." And the Houthi said, "Stick it in your ear." And we started bombing them. Terrible bombs, according to Trump. I mean, my God, what? Because Donald Trump ordered a bomb, it blows up with greater explosive force than the bomb that was dropped under Biden. Trump is an idiot. I hate to say that, and my wife is going to be very mad at me for saying this. But this is the kind of stupidity that a chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff has said, "Mr. President, stop. Cease and desist." The Secretary of Defense has to do an intervention, say, "Please don't do this. You are making us look stupid. You're putting us in a bad situation. And it's unbecoming of the Commander-in-Chief to speak in this fashion about conflict when American lives are on the line. Treat the Americans with respect, at least. Use words that impart the dignity of the service they are giving you instead of treating it like a childish video game." Mr. President, shut up. And that's what he needs to do. Shut up. If you're going to drop bombs, drop bombs. But quit pretending that because you're Donald Trump, the earth shakes greater because you dropped the damn bomb than somebody else. The bomb blows up, and you know who doesn't care? The Houthi. They don't give a damn, Mr. President. They're going to kick your ass just like they kicked everybody's ass because you can't follow through. All you can do is drop bombs. And your bombs won't stop them from firing missiles. And then you want to now threaten the Iranian people the same way. It isn't going to work, Mr. President, and what's going to happen are one of two things. One, you're going to look foolish because you're going to have to back down when your Secretary of Defense says, "We can't escalate any further without putting 700,000 boots on the ground. That's a major invasion that will cause the entire region to blow up. Oil prices will spin out of control, and your economy will crash, and you're finished, Mr. President. You're done. Everything you're trying to do, the American people will not tolerate $120 oil because they can't economically. All the changes you're making are predicated upon a foundation of economic stability, which will not be here if you throw oil security, energy security out the window by going to war with Iran. Stop it." Or he will actually go to war, thinking that somehow American bombs ordered by Donald Trump take on some sort of angelic property and blow up with greater violence and more terror than any other bomb ever made. And then the Iranians will shut down the Strait of Hormuz, blow up American installations, destroy Israel, and invite an American nuclear retaliation. And boom, the man who thought he was going to get the Nobel Peace Prize will go down in history as the greatest warmonger in modern history.
So how foolish is it to bomb the Houthis? What conceivable military benefit is there, or is the only benefit this crazy, as you call it, idiotic boasting for which he is known?
This is it. Look, this could have been solved the easiest way in the world. the president should have sent Steve Witkoff to Benjamin Netanyahu, punch Netanyahu in the nose, headbutt him in the face, put him in the chair, and say, lift the blockade against Gaza right now. You're done. You're finished. Stop the blockade. Get the humanitarian goods blowing back in. That's what should have happened. But no, we can't say no to the Israelis, apparently, or the president just isn't smart enough to realize the ramifications of what Netanyahu did, not realizing that the Houthi linked, the reason why the Houthi stopped firing their missiles last time is that the ceasefire came in as they demanded, and the humanitarian goods flow, and the Houthi were people of their word, and they said, we're done. But no, they allowed it to happen again. Mr. President, you can't bomb these people into submission. There's a video of a Houthi fighter going out to recover the wounded the body of his friend. The man's wearing sandals. He's got his little dish dash on. Not body armor. He's not dressed like an American commando and all this kind of stuff. And he's running with his body through enemy fire. You see the bullets kicking all around him. They're trying to get, and he keeps running in the desert under fire with a body on his shoulders, and he recovers his friend. That's who we're fighting. We can make fun of them. We can use all the derogatory terms we want. They wear sandals. They do this. They do that. They do this. They're the toughest people in the world when it comes to fighting in that area of the world, and we are not going to beat them.
Who are they? What does Houthi mean? Is it the name of a human being, or is it a geographic location?
No, the Houthi, it's the name of a family that's head of a tribe that embraces an offshoot of the Shia Islamic faith. They are, you know, native to that area in the Arabian Peninsula. They actually, the territory that belongs to them crosses over into Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia has been at war with the Houthi in one way or another for many, many decades. And they always lose. Every time they come in, they lose. Now, the Saudi Arabians drew an arbitrary line on the map. If they continue this fight with the Houthi, one of the reasons why they had to have their ceasefire is the Houthi said, hey, you keep wanting to do this, we'll just come and take our territory back, which means they're going to take the southern part of Saudi Arabia. And they were moving in that direction. They can't be beat. They can't be beat. These are the toughest people in the world when fighting on their own territory. But they're very insular. Their extreme loyalty to themselves. They're used to being treated as outsiders by the non-Houthi. But like I said, these people are very resilient. They haven't been beaten yet, and they're not going to be beaten.
Here's somebody who does not understand that, and he should. Cut number six.
What we can't ignore, and the reason why the president mentioned Iran, is because the Iranians have supported the Houthis. They provided them intelligence. They provided them guidance. They provided them weaponry. I mean, there's no way the Houthis, okay, the Houthis would have the ability to do this kind of thing unless they had support from Iran. And so this was a message to Iran. Don't keep supporting them, because then you will also be responsible for what they are doing in attacking Navy ships, in attacking global shipping.
Well, it's curious. Just a little. When I was a weapons inspector in Iraq, about halfway through, we'd always ask the Iraqis, do you have any, you know, missiles you haven't declared? And then it became apparent that they actually had an SS-21 Tochka, which is a short-range ballistic missile. But it had been provided by Yemen. And wait a minute. But I thought Yemen doesn't have any capabilities. Well, the Yemen provided the missile. They were experts in the missiles. Yemen had its own ballistic missile manufacturing capability. The Houthi, the Yemenis, have scientists trained in Western universities. They've produced from scratch hypersonic missiles using their own calculations, their stuff. They may receive some assistance from the Iranians on guidance and control in terms of components that are incorporated. But no, I would say that it's a mistake to denigrate the Houthi. Just like when I have people talk to me about Iraq, I was in a conversation the other day with somebody. They said, well, clearly the Iraqis got all their support from abroad because they're not capable of doing this on their own. I said, you don't know anything about the Iraqis. They're extremely well-educated, capable engineers, some of the best in the world at what they do. And that's why they were able to accomplish what they accomplished. You denigrate the Houthi at your own risk. These are very sophisticated, educated, cultured people. And Marco Rubio would do well to go get advice, maybe sit down with somebody like Alistair Crook, who has experience in the region and can set him straight on this. And the other thing is he needs to be careful about linking Iran and the Houthi together in a way that makes Iran culpable for what the Houthi do, because the United States provides a hell of a lot of weapons to a lot of people around the world who do a whole bunch of stuff with those weapons. And we open ourselves up to be treated in the same fashion.
So if Iran is morally and legally culpable for what the Houthis do, the United States is morally and legally culpable for what the Ukrainians do and for what the IDF does in its slaughter. Here's a Houthi spokesperson. Maybe it's an AI translation, but it's a legitimate translation. Maybe Secretary Rubio or somebody on his staff will listen. Chris?
The American enemy launched a blatant aggression against our country in the past hours, with more than 74 airstrikes targeting several areas in the governorates of Sana'a, Sada, Al-Baida, Hajja, Dama, Marib, and Al-Jawf. The American enemy committed a number of massacres, resulting in the martyrdom and injury of dozens in a preliminary toll. In response to this aggression, the armed forces, with the help of God Almighty, carried out a qualitative military operation. It targeted the American aircraft carrier USS Harry Truman and its warships in the Northern Red Sea with 18 ballistic and cruise missiles, as well as a drone, in a joint operation carried out by the missile forces, the drone air force, and the naval forces.
Did the Houthis strike back at the aircraft carrier Harry Truman?
100%. Of course they did. They didn't succeed. The defensive capabilities of the carrier battle group were sufficient to shoot down these threats. But they struck back, and Judge, they're going to continue to strike back.
Why do we pick these fights, Scott?
Arrogance, ignorance. I mean, the two are the same. The arrogance, again, we could have prevented all of this if we had respected the legitimacy of the Houthi position, which is we are here as Arabs, as Muslims, defending our fellow Arabs and Muslims in Gaza from genocide. So please cease fire, get the humanitarian goods in. They weren't asking for Israel to surrender. They weren't asking for anything unreasonable. They just said, stop the genocide against the people of Gaza. And when the genocide stopped, the Houthis stopped. And that should have been a clear signal to the president. The easiest way to keep the Houthi out of this conflict is to keep the humanitarian goods flowing into the civilian population of Gaza. Why the president allowed Netanyahu to do this? Because now we have a carrier battle group. I mean, come on, Elon Musk and Doge. I'd like you to do a cost comparison of how much it's going to cost us to go into this military conflict with the Houthi that we're not going to win versus telling Netanyahu to simply let the humanitarian goods in. I think you're going to find that we're going to lose billions, tens of billions, maybe even hundreds of billions of dollars over the course of this effort, and we're not going to win. And all we had to do is pick up the phone and pay whatever Ma Bell charges for a conversation between the president and Netanyahu, or God, send Steve Witkoff over, spend a couple thousand dollars on airfare and tell Netanyahu to cease and desist. For a guy who believes in, balancing the budget, this was really the easiest thing in the world. But the arrogance, we're America, we dictate outcomes, people must listen to us, do what we say. And now we're trying to dictate to the Houthi, who don't give a damn. They don't care about being bombed because they've been bombed for a decade. If you don't think that these people know how to survive in bombing, then what are we going to do? Escalate? Let me tell you the other reality about the United States right now. We have no clue who or what we're bombing. Okay, these are mobile relocatable targets. We're going to hit sites that we have. We think there's something there. We're going to bomb them. But look what happened. We're killing civilians, innocent civilians, and our frustration is going to grow. This is a repeat of Desert Storm all over again during the counter-SCUD campaign that I played a very big role in. We didn't blow up a single target because we couldn't find them. We didn't know where they were, but we blew up a lot of buses. We blew up a lot of tents. We blew up a lot of trucks. We killed a whole bunch of innocent people in our frustration trying to stop a military problem we didn't understand. We don't understand the Houthi problem, and yet we're going to continue to escalate and bomb. According to Donald Trump, it's going to be worse than you've ever seen. All we're going to do is kill innocent civilians, by the thousands, putting us on the same page in terms of acts of genocide that the Israelis are.
Did something happen recently that provoked this, or did Trump just wake up saying, let's conduct a bombing raid this afternoon?
I think, no, the Houthi announced that they're going to resume firing missiles into against Israeli shipping because Israel had violated its its requirement to provide humanitarian goods to the citizens of Gaza. So the Houthi said, if Israel is going to starve the people of Gaza, then we will resume cutting off Israeli shipping through the Red Sea.
Scott Ritter, thank you, my dear friend.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear ladies. Welcome back to a new episode of your very favorite Muslim lady. This is Asma. I have the honor to be your host. And again, I have the pleasure to be at the service of Sister Zainab.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming here. I would like you to give us a very brief introduction about yourself for those people who have just joined us.
All right. I'm Turfatul and Zainab Askari, and I am from Kashmir, which is under Indian administration. And I have been living in Iran for some past 9 years now. And I have studied a master's in linguistics, and I'm also engaged in the Hausa studies. And at the same time, I'm teaching.
Very perfect. We're going to talk about something that relates all the women. Like, as you go and surf in the net or in the social media, wherever you go, you might face some videos and some women repeating this sentence that an independent woman is not impressed by money. So, to some extent, that's very true. An independent woman is not impressed by money. She's not looking for money anymore. She doesn't have to depend on anyone for financial issues because she already is the queen of her own reign.
Yeah.
So what is she looking for? What could impress her then?
Women looks for a lot of things beyond financial security, especially an independent woman who can actually take care of a lot of things herself. And the first thing I would say is that she looks for kindness.
Exactly. Check to that.
Yeah. So, you know, in Surah Nisa, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala commands, and live with them in kindness.
Mm-hmm.
So Islam places a special emphasis on respectful and honorable treatment of women. So, you know, in some societies, we still have those gender stereotypes that men can talk with ego, with pride, with whatever the way.
Domineering characteristic.
Yeah. So, but Islam teaches completely a different story. And what actually Islam, the basic rights it has given to a woman, she also demands the same rights. She also expects the same things.
And we can look at the life of the Prophet and how he treated his daughter and how he treated his wife.
Yeah, having said about the Prophet, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon him and his purified family, he said, the best of men in my community are those who are not harsh and arrogant towards their families, who are gentle with them and do not oppress them. And also Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said, may Allah have mercy on a servant who treats his wife well.
Mm-hmm.
In another hadith, Imam Ali alayhi salam says, always be kind to your wife and treat her well so that your life becomes peaceful. So if you as a man yourself want a peaceful life, Imam gives you a password. Be kind to your wife.
Yeah.
Be nice to your wife, you know. So yes, she's looking for kindness.
For respect, which cannot be kindness.
Yes. another thing, like, she really wants, and these things cannot be bought from money.
Exactly.
Is peace of mind.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we have a verse of Quran wherein it says that, and among his signs is that he created for you from yourself spouses that you may find tranquility in them, and he placed between you affection and mercy.
Yeah.
Indeed, in that are the signs for people who give a thought, like people of thought, you know, mm-hmm. who reflect, people of those who are who do tadabbur, tafakkur, you know.
Exactly. So literally, I would translate that verse into, he has created the other halves for you that would complete you and give you peace
tranquility,
and tranquility.
Peace, yeah. So the philosophy of marriage in itself and the family formation is to achieve that tranquility.
Yeah.
And Islam opposes anything that disrupts this peace of life. Therefore, it's really essential for every man to take steps to preserve his wife's tranquility.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is this perspective among the inhabitants of Earth, as in today's world, that they do tend to believe that women look for money. I actually don't say that, okay, from where does this view come?
We don't say they don't. We don't say she does not, but I would say it's not only that.
Oh.
Even if there's an independent woman,
mm-hmm.
I would say even she likes when her husband buys her something.
Yeah.
She won't ask you for mm-hmm. it. Even if she's in need of something, she won't ask you for it because of that pride and ego or something that comes with when you become independent. But yeah, Islam gives us other teachings on that. It should not be there. But still, somewhere, somehow, in an independent lady, there is this ego that I'm not going to ask because I'm already independent.
Exactly.
So, but no woman dislikes if husband takes care of all those necessary things
mm-hmm.
himself, because a man
yeah.
in Islam is obliged. He has to take care of...
It's his responsibility
it's his
to
responsibility.
Provide everything. The financial issues is with men.
Yeah.
Based on Islam, if we're talking based
yeah.
in Islam.
At least for the housing, clothing, and,
yeah.
you know, the shelter. These are the basic...
But then, if we come to the realistic world, we see that, at least in our cultural families, let's say, when there is an urge for marriage, the problem comes with money.
Yeah.
Like, usually, the family of the girl are so demanding,
yeah.
even if the girl is not.
Yeah.
Even if the girl is not, the family of the girl are so demanding about the financial issues. To some extent, I would understand their concern. Like, they would love to be sure about the future of their daughter, that she's not going to be thrown out into the street.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the only thing they actually care for.
Recently, I got a text from
mm-hmm.
India. There was this girl who texted me a message that was a forwarded message about the qualities of a guy. Her family has been looking for her.
Mm-hmm.
And I could only see one thing, how many financial achievements he had. And she wrote one statement which made me cry. And she wrote under that statement, I feel like I'm being sold.
Exactly.
You know, when those financial achievements of boy were being seen, she said, this is not what I want.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Yes, you're listening to Muslim Lady, and we're talking about what a woman would want, because an independent woman who already has provided everything for herself is not going to be impressed by money anymore. So, she must be looking for something else, something beyond the materialistic financial issues that everybody in today's world is talking about.
That especially cannot be bought by money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That
so
cannot be bought.
We talked about, like, she needs kindness, respect, and peace of mind.
Yeah. So, you know, in many episodes, even in Muslim Lady, we've talked about women when they fell into depression.
Yeah.
Now, there are, unfortunately, now I know that maybe there among the audience there would be people who say, I'd rather to be depressed in a luxurious house instead of being depressed in a tiny cozy corner that
mm-hmm.
nobody knows about me. But then, if we come to talk logically, There are many people among the bloggers, among the people whom you would consider as, okay, they have the perfect life I have ever wished for myself. Among these people, you see those who are constantly going to therapists. They want to achieve something that is lost in their life, and everybody thinks that they are having a perfect life.
Yeah.
So according to this incident, we could perfectly come to this